Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
I called in sick. I don't work in the rain.
Boy, I kind of mailed that in.
You can't deliver mail.
Why not?
Yeah, whatever.
I guess you're right. It's just walking around and putting it in the boxes.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan.
And Mac Jameson.
Mac Jameson.
Sitting in for the hour.
If you missed out on this in the previous hour.
It was the ultimate screw job. / troll job / wall squat deuce and toss that's ever happened on this show.
Yeah, we kind of set you up a little bit. We told you that. Well, I told you we had done a pre-tape because yesterday you were hoping for a pre-tape, right? And we called up a Vegas legend, a guy by the name of Mac Jameson, who's a grizzled vet, lived in Vegas his whole life, doesn't even go on the strip. Like, he's off the strip.
Yeah.
He hates the strip. He hates New Vegas. And allegedly, he played a bunch of games back in the mid-90s with the Las Vegas Wranglers, and Radek Bonk was on that team.
Was it the Wranglers or the Thunder?
Maybe you're right.
I think it was
the... It doesn't matter. The guy's
the
fake.
The Wranglers, yeah. Exactly.
Doesn't really matter. The team might as well be fake, too. And
how long did you fire it up? How long did... Like, 2 minutes, and then it was done?
Yeah, it's maybe a two-minute, two-and-a-half minutes. Do you want to hear the whole thing again?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, because he hasn't really heard it.
I haven't listened to 1 second. All I heard was, hey, Brian.
Yeah, so the whole point was we were hoping that you wouldn't really be listening, and you weren't.
Right.
So this was our interview, our exclusive interview from the previous hour with Vegas legend Mac Jameson. All right, joined now by a Las Vegas legend. This guy is born and raised in Vegas. He was a big hockey player growing up. He always wanted to make it to the NHL. And back in the early 90s, he actually got called up to the Las Vegas Wranglers of the IHL. And he came up for about 10, 15 games back in the mid-90s. And he joins us now, Mac Jameson. Mac, what's happening?
Is this Brian?
This is Brian.
Brian, it's great to be on the show. Very excited. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Are you still living down in Vegas?
I am living in Vegas, and I'm, waiting for the call for the big team to call me up. It's pretty exciting.
I can imagine. I mean, do you still play? Are you still in shape?
Well, once a week I get out and, dangle around a little bit. I wasn't a guy who handled the puck too much. I like to drop the gloves, but I think it's... It's my time, there's still a chance for me to get back there.
Well, I hope so. I mean, and this would be a perfect time for a guy like you to make it back to the NHL when your hometown team is in the Stanley Cup final. Take us back to the mid-90s. We're chatting with Mac Jameson, a Vegas legend who used to play the game and played for the Las Vegas Wranglers of the IHL in the mid-90s. What was it like playing in Vegas back then?
Well, it was real exciting. We played at the Thomas and Mack Center. They were the crowd was right into it, and we had a youngster on our team, a guy named Radek Bonk.
Right,
17 years old. He was an up and comer. I don't think he went on to a real successful NHL career, but boy, was he good in the IHL. He was my line mate one night.
No way.
I ended up having to protect him because he got. He got run in his mouth a little bit too much.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that kind of stuff. We're chatting with Mac Jameson, an absolute Vegas legend, also known as Jamie Noodles McLennan. do you think this guy, O-Dog, who is demanding a pre-tape, do you think he's even in the studio right now?
I guarantee you this guy is not even listening. if anything, he is either taken a break and gone to the bathroom or gone to the cafeteria for a coffee. There's not a chance this guy is listening to the pre-tape.
No, there's no way. All right, let's pretend there was technical difficulties and we'll cut out short, and hopefully he's either not in the room, or if he is, we'll just throw him off completely.
Okay, I'm going to drop the phone right now.
That was Mac Jameson. Now you've heard the whole thing. You heard the end. How do you feel about the whole thing?
It was brilliant.
You guys played it perfectly because I didn't listen to 1 second, and all of a sudden it was like just blank, and I'm thinking, how does a pre-tape go south like that? It's never happened ever.
No. You went from 30, you thought there was going to be 20 to 30 minutes of
I thought
this.
I had 30 minutes off. Boom. Pre-tape. I even asked you, I'm like, did you stretch it out?
You're like,
yeah, I hooked you up, man. I'm like, I honestly love you. felt like I got drafted. I was so happy. I'm like, I love my job. To being punked. I got punked. I'm going to look in the camera. I got punked.
Riley from St. John texting in saying, you guys just Manti Te'o'd the O-Dog. Yeah, you did get Manti Te'o'd.
I got Manti Te'o'd.
Yeah. Radio catfishing.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. Catfishing. We won't do that to you ever again. Won't do it to you.
Yeah.
But now we have...
My internet girlfriend is four bills with a beard living in a basement.
In Nebraska.
Yeah.
But that's your chick.
We Manti Te'o'd you.
Yeah. So, but now we have the creation of Mac Jameson, a complete legend and
exactly
that's rum our, nose
the alter ego.
Yeah,
alter ego
of this show is Mac Jameson.
Yes.
All right, living legend out in Vegas, and I'm sure he will have a life of his own on this radio show for a long, long time.
For sure, there's going to be the legend of Mac, and what was he up to this weekend? What do you think he got into?
Yep. It all makes sense.
A couple too many whiskeys, ended up in the clink, got into a bar fight.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Yeah. There's a lot of people writing in with how they would break down, like, the specifics of Mac Jameson.
What he's
5'8", 287. Just a grit grinder.
Just gritty.
Mac Jameson.
No, I think this guy was more like 6'4". Like,
we got to get someone a profile. We need a professional profile.
Yeah.
On Mac Jameson.
You know what we should do? We should get Craig and Bobby Mack to do a full like scouting report.
Yeah.
Of Mac Jameson.
Yeah.
We got to do it. Speaking of a beast, did you see last night in that Houston game where Timberlake was sitting beside J.J. Watt?
J.J. Watt is a monster.
He's 6'6", 290.
I think...
Would you want to sit beside him at a sporting event?
Not with those tiny chairs. Like, Timberlake was just jammed into his chair. And I think Watt was trying to be respectful, like he wasn't being a hero. But he's just so big. And I saw it on Twitter last night. I think Dutchie was tweeting about it. But you don't wear a T-shirt. Like, JJ can wear a T-shirt. You don't wear a T-shirt with the gun showing next to that guy.
Oh, you're going to look like a smurf.
His arms are massive.
He's huge. He's 6'6", 290.
290?
And ripped. What would be a worse experience for you? Sitting beside JJ Watt for a three-hour sporting event or a three-hour flight?
Yeah, that's 3-hour flight.
Flight's
worse. Because you can't
sporting
get up.
Sporting event, you can
if you can try
move around.
Plus, those were great seats. If you're on a flight, let's say not business class, say you're in the middle of the plane, middle seat, or he's in the middle seat, J.J. Watt's in the middle seat, and you're in the window, and this guy's pouring into your chair. There's nothing you can do.
And there's really nothing you can do. What are you going
to
say?
Toronto to L.A.
Yeah. You're not going to fight him, or you're not going to tell on him. You can't be like, you have to give me my space. He can't give you his space.
No,
he's 6'6", 290. But yeah, he made Timberlake honestly look like he was 4'8" and like 97 pounds.
Yeah. Timberlake did look quite meek.
I don't think he's the biggest guy anyway, but besides...
I didn't realize he was 290.
Yeah. 6'6", 290, and he gets after quarterbacks. Probably runs a 40 in like 4.7.
That's crazy. 4.8.
Find out J.J. Watt's 40 number at the combine. Like, I don't think he probably doesn't update it. Once you get to the NFL, you would never update that. But I'll bet you at the combine, I'll bet you he ran that in like a 4.7.
U.S. College Sporty Recruiting on his Wikipedia, 4.70.
You have 4.70. You have 4.84 at the. Well, you probably have it at the combine hunt, and you probably have it at his pro day.
This is college recruiting information for high school athletes. He was in Wisconsin high school, 6'5", 220 at the time.
Wow,
4.7.
So he's beefed up. Obviously, he's 70 pounds heavier than that, or at least he's listed that.
Hmm. You think a guy like that had to have gone on the sauce?
Like,
I don't know, man. Okay, so in college he's 70 pounds. How do you put 70 pounds on? Like, of muscle and stuff. Without having little bit of help.
When you see the size of those football players, excuse me, it's hard to think how it could be natural to begin with. They're giant human beings that are ripped.
And I get, they eat steaks that are the size of our heads.
And they work out at a level that's crazy.
Yeah, I get it, but it's 220 to 290. That's some beef. I put 26 pounds on in 2 months, eating and drinking like an idiot during the lockout.
Well,
but that's fat and just that's I would have another 50 or 45 pounds to go. Like that's
it wouldn't shock me, you know, if he's had some help one way or the other. The NFL, they don't really frown upon it. Like you get suspended, but I don't even know how much they test for PEDs or steroids, and if they do catch you, you're out for like four games and you come back and it's not a blemish on your resume.
Right.
It's not like in baseball where if you get caught, you're done. You're never going to make it to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
They just don't frown upon it the same way.
Yeah, so Hunt was right because at his pre-draft measurables, he was 4.84 in the 40 yards. But I was higher on his Wikipedia page, and this is kind of, I think, when he was in high school. 6'5", 220, 4.7.
So that's high school. I mean, you got to think about that. Like, 70 pounds is a lot, and maybe it's not quite 70. Maybe it's really, like, 50 or 60.
Yeah.
But if you're 17 compared to when you're 27 and you're a professional athlete, so all you do is work out and all you do is concentrate on that.
You fill out as a man, I get it, but man, that's a
it's a lot of weight.
That's a serious commitment. And I'm not, you know, don't send me notes. I'm not accusing the guy of saying he's on the juice. I'm just asking how do you put that amount on? I mean, yeah, guys turn the corner physically, but that is some hard work and a lot of beef.
Yeah, it can be. All right, so Ray might be joining us later in the hour now. I don't know what Ray's doing. And maybe we'll catch up with Griff here in a moment. But should we play this Sundin clip?
Yeah.
He was on Leafs Lunch earlier. This is a really interesting clip about, asked about Austin Matthews and the captaincy. And Sundin was a captain here for a long, long time. And
yeah.
This got me thinking. Like, we've all, I think, placed a Jerry's percentage on who's going to be the next captain. And I think we're all at like 100%, right? That we for think sure. It's going to be Matthews. This clip, I got to be honest, hearing this clip, and I'm not saying that Sundin has insight on what's going to happen.
Right.
But might lead me to change my number a little bit. All right. This is Matt Sundin earlier today on Leafs Lunch.
Obviously, you would look at that. I mean, it's easy to say off the mat because he should be the captain. But saying that, it has to be a player and a person also that want to carry that responsibility and actually plays better wearing the C. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, you have to be within the room and be close to the team. And I'm sure everybody that is in that position knows who the guys or who's potentially going to be the captain.
So the comment where he says,
by the way, don't go Toronto media on this and blow this out of proportion. It's basically saying Austin Matthews is the guy, but they have to go to him, see if he wants to be the guy, if he's comfortable with the guy.
That's my point, though. That's what I'm saying. That is the clip. You got to get someone who wants to be the captain and who's going to play well or play better as the captain. Who's to say Matthews isn't going to be like, you know what, I'd rather not be the captain? Yeah. And if he said that, would that change your view of him?
Well, Austin Matthews knows if he should be the captain or not. He also could say, you know what, Morgan Riley's a captain of this hockey team.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's throw a hypothetical, though. Would you think differently of Austin Matthews if they offered him the captaincy and he said, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it for this market. I just want to play hockey here. Would I think there would be?
I think there'd be blowback.
I think there would be blowback.
There'd be blowback, but I also can't even get myself into that position because that would never happen. I believe he is one of those automatic captain, best player, whole meal deal like the rest of them: Crosby, Taze, Kane, McDavid. He's one of those guys, and I don't.
He checks off all those boxes.
Yeah, he does.
But what you mentioned, the one other guy is Riley. And anyone that follows this team or is connected to the team in any way, they say Morgan Riley is he's the main guy.
Yeah, he's the backbone.
He's the backbone of the team. He's the guy in the room that everyone connects with. He's been here for 4 or 5 years. Everything kind of goes through him. He and Matthews are really close, but he's really close with a bunch of different guys on the team.
Right.
We've interviewed him. We've met him a bunch.
He would be, I mean, if Austin Matthews wasn't here, Riley would be the guy.
I think it would be
not even
very obviously
very
the guy.
Obvious,
and I agree with what you're saying, that it feels like it's Crosby, McDavid. These guys, it very rarely goes the opposite way. But, I mean, it's not inconceivable that they go to him and Matthews goes, I wouldn't feel comfortable with being the captain over Riley, or I don't know if I want to be the captain in the biggest Canadian market. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, because he's never said outright, yes, I want to be the captain. I think that's out of respect to the captaincy and to the team. And
I think it's a slam dunk. He wants to be the captain. He will be the captain, and it'll happen this year.
You think it's 100%?
I think I do.
I've always thought it was 100%, but I'll be honest. Hearing that, I might be down to like 90%, which is still me suggesting I think it's a borderline lock, but maybe he does say like, you know what? I got to be honest. I'd rather Riley do media every single day than me. Or I think Riley would be more comfortable. Or, you know, what if it's a player's vote?
Yeah.
Like in Montreal, it was a player's vote and Patch already got it.
Yeah. And guess who doesn't like that in Montreal? Everybody.
Well, but the team was, they care about the team, not the fans.
They made Max Pacioretty captain because they did not want to make P.K. Subban the captain. That's what happened there.
Well, I mean, Carey Price was, you can put the C on the goalie. Price was their best player.
Well, it's happened once, and so we know how that worked out.
It didn't work out. But, I mean,
maybe the Leafs will sign Jameson and make him the captain.
Take a look at Calgary's model. Mark Giordano's the captain there.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the best player? Johnny Gaudreau? Monahan? You don't have to automatically hand it to the best player. Automatically. I mean, some guys just, they're leaders. They want it, right? Or it just comes naturally. I believe Matthews will be the captain. I think he'll handle it fine. But maybe there is a layer to him. It's like, I don't want to deal with it. I'm going to talk every day because I'm going to score a bunch of goals and I'm going to be a star. So I'm going to be, you know, I've played with great captains. Our best players in St. Louis, I mean, Chris Pronger was a 23-year-old captain. We had Al MacInnis on the team. We had Brett Hull. We had Pierre Turgeon. We had Hall of Famers. Grant Fear, I mean, and goaltender again. But Pronger was certainly the captain, but there was a leadership group there that if decisions had to be made, it wasn't just him doing it. There was a bunch of guys. And I think it's a slam dunk, but I think, I'm like you, Brian, I think there's a layer to it that he has to make sure that he's ready for it at 21 years old. He turns 21 on September, 18th?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the biggest hockey market in the world. It comes with a massive responsibility, and I'm sure he's up to it, but I don't know. His personality doesn't seem like a guy who's very tolerant
but
either.
But neither does, you know, McDavid doesn't scream that either.
Nope,
McDavid,
not at all. You're right.
Is, you know, not the kind of guy who you think of as I'm going to deal with this every single day.
I think McDavid will learn, grow like Sid. Sid grew into his mm-hmm. captaincy as far as how he handled himself
yeah.
in the media. McDavid will be like that. Matthews will be like that.
Yeah. Exactly. But, like, Matthews just went through an experience here in Toronto where he didn't perform well in the playoffs. He was criticized heavily for the first time in his career. At one point, he decided not to come out and speak to the media.
Yeah.
And if you're the captain, there's no doing that anymore.
No.
You know, especially in the playoffs. You can't, after a playoff game, be like, no, check, please, I'm not talking.
No.
You know, it does, regardless of how you feel about the captaincy and how you would compare it to the old days, it's a very different game and has a very different meaning. There are still certain responsibilities that haven't changed.
Yeah.
And if you wear it, I don't think you have to talk every day. I don't think you should be forced to talk every single
day.
Totally. But I do think every big game you got to talk. And in the playoffs, you definitely have to talk.
You got
to
speak on behalf of the players.
You have to. Right? And you have to be comfortable as the captain, too. Like, this stuff between him and Babcock representing the players sometimes. Right. Going into the room and being like, we need a day off.
Yeah.
Right. Going out to the front of the plane. We don't want to go to practice tomorrow.
Right.
We want off. You got to
You're the guy. You're the liaison between the team and the coach. You're the guy. And you know, probably Morgan was that guy because he was the most senior. When Phaneuf left, Morgan was probably the most senior guy as far as outspoken. Morgan Riley has leadership qualities. Doesn't mean that he has to be the captain. The same thing. Like, I think Austin Matthews will be the captain, but Riley can be a powerful voice in that room as far as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin can use Morgan Riley as a mentor in that way.
Well, and Marlowe's still here. Exactly. I mean, Ron Hainsey's kicking around. It's always by committee. It's never one guy anyway.
You're right.
But
it is.
I just found that interesting what Matt said, and I don't think that's Sundin indicating one thing or the other. He's speaking from his own experience, but I mean, the reality is, if anyone's going to be able to speak on what it's like to be a captain in this city, it's him. I mean, there's only been so many of them.
I think a lot of that stuff, like, as much as I appreciated captains I played for, like, you want to host the Halloween party, you want to host the Christmas party. You want to talk to the media every day. I just want you to go out on the ice and make a big play when it counts or be the guy all the time. That's all I cared about.
Yeah.
I don't need a rah-rah speech. I'm in the NHL, man. I don't need a. Yeah, I don't need somebody to pump me up or, like, it's just go out there and be the man on the ice. That's all I care about. Ron Francis hardly ever said a word.
Yeah.
But he got it done.
I think the captaincy is bigger to people outside the dressing room than it is in the room. Like, because I'm the same way. The teams that I played for had really good leadership cores for the most part. Aguilar was our captain. He was our best player. He was our leader. But there were other guys in the room, the Robin Regeers and guys like that, that were more vocal, more engaged. As far as hosting parties and putting together stuff, there is a little bit more responsibility. But I think when you have a good leadership group, your captain is just the face of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I've experienced on the good teams that I played for. There was always a strong leadership group of whether it was veterans or young guys that worked well together and communicated with each other. And then the captain was kind of the face of what happened.
Well, and the truth is, regardless of who gets it, and again, we all still think it will be Matthews. Matthews is still the man on the team. You know, in terms of when you actually drop the puck and you start playing the games. I mean, this is Auston Matthews' team. He hasn't had the captaincy for the past 2 years. That hasn't changed where he stands in terms of the pecking order and who's on the marquee. I mean, it's Matthews, and it's going to continue to be.
Yes.
I think it'll be interesting to see if Marner ever gets an A or Nylander ever gets an A. I mean, those guys are in different positions as younger guys who are coming up. But if you expect
Kane, he's been – I don't even know if he has a letter – to date.
I don't know if he does either.
You got to earn it, though. Like, that's the thing. Just because you're a really good player doesn't mean you get a letter. Because maybe you are, like, a guy who doesn't want that responsibility or doesn't warrant it. You show up, you play hockey, you're good at it, you move on. Some players have that personality. That's the only thin layer. I don't know Auston Matthews, so I don't know what his personality's like. I don't know what he's like in the room. So there's your 10% of... You know, maybe he doesn't want it, or maybe it's just not in his DNA
That's what I'm saying, exactly. And I don't know either. I don't know him. I have no idea if he would.
I think you'd be.
How he's going to approach it, how they're going to handle it as an organization, where he stands on that.
I think he's going to be a good captain because of your best player. You know, you just go up.
He's a confident guy, too. Exactly. I think confidence is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Look who just started following me on Twitter.
Mac Jameson.
At the Mac Jameson. Las Vegas Wrangler, IHL legend, grit grinder on Twitter. Here we go. All right, Ray's out. Forget Ray. I don't know what he's doing with his life, but...
It's too bad. Mac wanted to have a chat with him.
Yeah, he did. But Richard Griffin's got some Mac Jameson going on. I picture Griff and Mac having some cocktails back in the late 80s in Vegas. Maybe in Montreal.
Old Vegas.
Old Vegas. Like Joe Pesci Vegas. Yeah. So Richard Griffin, Toronto Star columnist, he will join us. We'll get into his column today about Donaldson and what Donaldson's been saying about the team, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., the staff, and how horrible it's been recently and how it's starting to show cracks with the bullpen as well. And Roberto Osuna, another week extension with the administrative leave.
Yeah.
So now it's up to June 4th. Basically, until he's in court, he's not coming back.
For sure.
And then after that, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So Griff will join us. We'll tee up the series. Jay's down in Philly next. As promised, we jumped on the Skip the Dishes app earlier this afternoon, ordered up some food, so the boys are feeling it on a Friday.
We just went to town in the five-minute break. Now we got to fight back here.
Just sweating it out. It's pretty warm in here today.
Man, it is a little toasty.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful outside.
It's a little hot. I think it's a little excessive.
30? Too much for you?
Peg Bundy was laying out on the...
Really?
Come home,
getting
come
some
home.
Sun.
Yeah. Just sitting out there on the deck, just being lazy.
Actually, Peg sent me a text yesterday. I sent a response asking a question, and then just nothing.
Feathers.
I'm like, okay.
Don't you love this one? I love this one from people. Sorry, just got this. Really?
3 days later somehow.
people, all they do is look at their phones. You don't say, just got this. Yeah.
I think I did that a few days ago.
I've done that before, but I've gone past it. You get so many texts, you go past it.
It's a lie, but it's...
It's a lie, is the...
It is, but here's the thing.
You scrolled over it, ignored it, and then you moved on.
This is what happens to me sometimes. If I get a text during the show, like, I might check it in a break quickly, but not have time, and then I forget about it.
Right.
And then, you know, later that night, I'll be like, just got this.
Yeah.
Or just remembered is what I probably should be writing.
My own buddy screwed me over last night. Yeah, I'll call you in 10. Text you in 10. We'll meet out somewhere. Feathers.
See ya.
Feathers. Yeah,
that's society, man. We're living in a society here.
Well, people are all over the map.
What are you going to do? The Jays aren't helping in terms of the mood of the city. No. I mean, it's hot, it's sticky, and the Jays are 4 games under .500 and melting. Like, they're, what are they, 6.5 out of the second wild card now?
Yeah, and it'd be nice if they were good. You go down.
Yeah, it'd be great. Get the roof open. Let's go see a couple of wins. Feel good about things. Yeah. They just went 1-6 on their most recent homestand, and now they're in Philly, and Philly's the surprise team of baseball, them in Atlanta. So it's not like it's going to be easy. No. And Gabe Kapler, your boy.
I was just going to say, he's battled back.
The complete opposite of John Gibbons is Gabe Kapler.
This guy got booed.
Yeah, he did. Joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our good buddy from the Toronto Star, Richard Griffin. How you doing, Griff?
Hey, guys, doing well.
Is there a bigger polar opposite in the game than Gabe Kapler and John Gibbons?
Well, I think at hotels on the road, you don't see Gibby in the workout room too often. And I'd say by 5 a.m., you're going to see Kapler down there.
Yeah.
They were complaining at MLB TV at the ballpark yesterday that Kapler, because MLB was carrying the game the day before, about how Kapler is the only guy in Major League Baseball who blew them off for a post-game interview. And in that way, he's different than everybody. And he, as you said earlier, he got booed at home. He's an analytics guy. But I think the Jays might have a little trouble down there because they're young, they're athletic, and they're hungry.
Yeah, the Jays are – I don't know what the Jays are. I mean, they should be hungry.
Well, the Jays are 23-27, which is exactly the same record as in 2017 when everybody said they had improved so much and what a great start it was in 2018 and they're way better than the year before. And now after 50 games, they end up at exactly the same spot. They came at it from a different angle, but it's the same result.
Griff, do you not think the Jays should – I mean, you never want to pull the pin on something – but, like, just get ahead of the curve. But once you do that and say we're not going to be good this year and you want to unload guys, I mean, what are you going to get for Donaldson now? But isn't it just, like, why not just get ahead of the curve and just say, you know what, let's start moving here instead of waiting around to the last minute and then you really get screwed?
Yeah, I think you're right. They certainly wouldn't get for Donaldson what they would have thought before the season started at the trade deadline. But instead of just dumping guys, I think maybe they could go and trade one of their starting pitchers. All of their starting pitchers except Jay Happ have been disappointing. Jaime Garcia is coming back in the rotation on Saturday, and everybody's saying, hey, that's great. He's only won one game all year. What makes that so great? But the thing is, I think I would just get rid of a couple of guys, but I would also, in June sometime, go the Vladimir Guerrero route and bring up the future. They're surrounded by, they have other players that are talented and will be there for a couple of years. So a rebuild at this point isn't what they're looking for. I think they just need to give up the ghost on competing for a wild card in 2018 and sort of find out who's not going to be a part of the future and trade those guys.
You caught up with Donaldson. You wrote about it today in the Star, and he said they've just got to improve across the board, you know, hitting, pitching, fielding, running bases. And then I think he was trying to convince you, but more so trying to convince himself that he actually believes they have the capabilities of doing that. Like,
yeah, he started out by saying that they had to improve in all areas, and he named them. And I said, well, you know, in the past I've seen teams that have pitched and haven't been hitting, and then the next week they'll hit and not pitch. But I've very rarely seen teams that don't do any of them well bounce back quickly. How do you see that? And that's when he went into the Josh Donaldson, the optimist mode, and I wasn't really buying it. And looking into his eyes, I don't think he was buying it too much either.
No, I don't see how you do with Richard Griffin from the start. And the rotation, this was supposed to be the bright spot, but Stroman's down in Florida. No one knows when he's coming back. Estrada's been very up and down and a lot more down recently. Jay Happ's been consistent. Sanchez can't find the strike zone. Jaime Garcia's been, you know, kind of missing starts, and he's been hot or cold anyway. Biagini can barely get through two or three innings. I mean, how can you be optimistic? Like, how can even the most optimistic Blue Jay fan feel like the rotation's finally going to figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, the pride of the what they were boasting about coming out of spring training is that of all the American League teams, they had the most consistent rotation top to bottom, and it's proven to be just that way. They're consistently mediocre, and so that's not really helping them compete. And what it's done is taken a bullpen that was a bright spot in April, made them get an extra three or four or five outs a game, taking them out of their comfort zone and what they were brought in to do, and now it's screwed up the bullpen as well. And it's had a trickle-down effect through the whole pitching staff. And when you look at Triple A and Double A, there's some talent down there, but they're not ready to come up and step in. Obviously, if Biagini and Sam Gavilio are the best available at the moment, there's some guys down there that are about a half a year away.
Where does the security of John Gibbons stand right now?
Well, you know, baseball more than any other sport, you guys know, is they compare it to playing chess. And Gibby is playing chess with a queen who acts like a pawn. And you can't compete. I mean, even Boris Spassky would be fired at that point. So I can't really put a finger on John Gibbons as the reason for the slump. In fact, if you're of a conspiracy theory mode that Atkins and Shapiro are happy that this is going on, because this is what they were brought in to do, is build a team, put their own stamp on it, then Gibby's doing a great job for them. You know, he's making a team that they can sell the future on with Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette and those guys, and they don't have to include him as a part of that future, but he can finish this season out and sort of lead them not to the promised land, but to where they want to be moving forward.
You think there's a chance that he could be just the guy? I think when Randy Carlyle got fired, it's almost like you got to show the fan base that you care, that you're not happy with what's going on. Could that be a situation where the, you know, Shapiro or Atkins are like, we got to show people that we care and this is unacceptable, and they just can the skipper?
I think that that moment of them trying to show the fan base is going to be when they bring Vlad Guerrero up. And I mean, if they don't bring Guerrero up, then Gibby could be that sacrificial lamb. But I think they're going to do that sometime in June when all of the numbers add up in terms of service time. And, you know, I know we overplay it sometimes, but I just wrote a column today to be published later online tonight about the scenario that would see him come up about June 11th with Washington and Atlanta coming into town. They've recently brought up their own young stud phenoms. And if the Jays competed against that and had him make his Rogers Center debut, they would sell out that place for a homestand, quick homestand. Doesn't matter what they do on this road trip, and I can see that scenario unfolding.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a moment ago the conspiracy theory that this is what Shapiro and Atkins wanted to happen, so they're actually happy with Gibbons. I don't think it's what they wanted to happen, but I think it's what they expected to happen. I never believed that they actually believed this was a good enough team to compete. So they just never were going to admit that publicly, because they wanted the ticket sales and they wanted the buzz and they want, you know, the ratings and people to be excited for the team. So, you know, they were selling false hope, but they're not stupid. These guys didn't just fall out of bed and become the president of a team and the GM of a team. They're aware of what they have in the evaluation process. And I think if you got Shapiro and Atkins or both of them in a room in a candid moment off the record, they'd say, yeah, 23 and 27, that's about right.
Yeah, I think the dumbest thing they did was jack season ticket prices for their biggest ticket items. And then Watts' 10,000 season ticket holders disappear even before the season started off of a 76-win season. I mean, a show of good faith would have been to come back with the same ticket prices until you put a contending team out there again, which, you know, obviously they knew it wasn't going to be this year. But if they knew it wasn't going to be this year and they lost 10,000 season tickets, I don't think that's too smart.
Thank you, Griff. Enjoy the weekend.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
They got to do something. I know they can't. I mean, not that they can't, but they won't.
Right, I don't now. Think they will. I honestly, these guys, they were in a position where I think ownership wants them to sell tickets. Ownership wants them to keep hope alive because of how crazy it's been for a couple of years, mm-hmm. right? Like the
It's not happening this year.
But it's not happening, and they knew that. Like Shapiro's been in baseball a long time. Atkins is a smart baseball guy.
Yeah.
They know. They looked at this lineup and they're like, How are they going to compete with Boston? Well,
everybody
and New York
knew it, but the question is, if you knew it, why didn't you make moves in the offseason?
Well,
maximize your assets and don't let guys show up and get hurt and have a dead arm, and then all of a sudden people are like, "What the hell's going on here?"
If they traded Donaldson in the offseason, though, that's basically telling everyone we're done.
You can't sell the opposite side.
You can't.
There's no hope.
So then, is your attendance and give a you-know-what factor for that team even lower? Because if you're going to keep the young guys in the minors and just have a team, that, like it's basically kind of the Leafs scenario. Now, the Leafs are a different animal because they still sold out during a last-place finish.
Mm-hmm. But they were honest with their fans for the first time ever, because the Leafs were in the same position for a long time.
Right.
When it was Nonis and it was Burke and it was Ferguson Jr. And
right.
They tried to convince people that it was a good team, and people looked at it and they're like, that's not a good team. And there's no way you actually think it's a good team.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you can look at this team. Like, maybe if everything breaks right, you know, the Leafs over that 10 years of ineptitude and losing, you know, somehow they backdoor their way in. And maybe this year, if everything breaks the Jays' way, they end up with 87 wins in the second wild card. Yeah. But that's not realistic.
No.
You know, it never was. And I don't believe sound management types roll the dice that way.
No.
They play the average. They don't play the long shot.
And they've got to answer to somebody. So you're sitting in a boardroom with your boss. You have to be completely honest. You're not lying to him. And then all of a sudden the boss comes back and goes, you said you were going to get me 90 wins.
Well, that's true. You go in there and you're like, no, I'm telling you, we're a playoff team, and you end up with 72 wins.
Yeah.
You got to go.
You go in there and say, this is my plan. This is what's going on. So even if it's not public, you've told your higher-ups, there's going to be pain. There are going to be people that are rattled.
We are not saying that anymore. There's going to be pain.
Right. Forgot about that. That has been abolished from our vocabulary.
Yeah.
Gone.
Painful.
Pain is here for the Jays.
Right. It's not coming. It's here.
Mac Jamison knows there's pain coming.
Brian Scalabrine, he's a grit grinder, longtime NBA player, current Celtics analyst with NBC down in Boston. He'll join us at 6:05. And Bobby Mack coming up. Bob McKenzie at 6:25. Speaking of Boston, you guys see this Rob Gronkowski story? And I don't even know if it's real. He may have taken it down because I liked the tweet and now I can't find it. So maybe, you know what, let me hold off on this. It was something about a horse in the Belmont. You guys hear about this story?
No,
that's named Gronkowski.
It's named Gronkowski, and the odds are 69-1. And
did Gronk tweet something?
Yeah. And the Belmont, I believe, is June 9th, which would be 6-9. Because, you know, he's obsessed with the number 69. And so he tweeted about it, but I guess he took it down. So maybe either someone got to him and said, hey, this is fake news, or, you know, you got to relax here with the number 69. Like, we get it, but let me see if I can find it.
Well, there's story. It's a top story. Gronkowski horse opens at 69-1 odds to win Belmont Stakes.
Oh, here we go. He didn't take it down, I guess. You'll never guess what the odds are for the Gronkowski racehorse in the Belmont Stakes. 69-1.
That's awesome.
Stars are aligned.
I think you got to sprinkle some money on that, don't you?
You put a 20 on that?
69 to 1? Those are great odds.
$69.
Would you put, you put a 50 down on it? That's a little rich, no?
50's a lot, but if it comes home...
Some cash.
You're really making it rain.
But what if it's just a dog? Like, what if it's just an awful...
If he's 69 to 1, it's an awful horse.
What if it's Harry Crumb?
Yes. Harry Crumb is the jockey.
Jockey. Isn't that who's Harry Crumb?
Yeah. He does play a jockey. Yeah.
Remember he couldn't fit into the phone booth?
Yeah. John Candy as a jockey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess this is real news. There actually is a horse named Gronkowski that will be at the Belmont.
Well, there you go. We'll have to track Eddie. We should get Eddie back on, Eddie Olczyk, and maybe Eddie would be able to tell us.
Definitely, because we'll have the Cup Final going on.
Yeah.
So Eddie will be down in Vegas probably anyway, calling it for NBC.
Oh, yeah.
And I would assume he'll be at the Belmont. Like, where is the Belmont's in New York, right?
Yeah.
So he can get up to New York. He can find a way to...
Oh, yeah.
Grease his way out of the Cup Final for a couple of days and get up to the Belmont Stakes. And
for sure.
Remember what he said about Justify, though. He's right. Like, he said, this is a man amongst boys. This horse is a monster. And it was like, what, 38 years in between Triple Crowns?
Yeah.
Was it American Pharoah that had it?
It's just been recent, yeah.
And that was only a couple of years ago. Yeah. And now it looks like it might happen again.
Wow.
If I'm betting a horse, I'm betting either Gronkowski or Justify.
I'm betting Gronkowski all day, every day.
I think you'll give your money away, though.
No way. I just got a good feeling about that.
It's a mutter. What is?
His mutter was a mutter. June 9th, 69 to 1. That's Vegas knowing that Gronkowski's going to promote it.
Absolutely.
And people are going to bet on it because of this.
Yeah,
Gronkowski is going to put probably $69,000 on this horse.
But he just made it even more popular.
Yeah. You got to adjust the odds. There's going to be a lot of money coming in. All right, Brian Scalabrine on Game 6, Cavs and Celtics. Chris Paul out for Game 6 in that series.
That's crazy, man.
That's a big hit, man. So we'll get into that. The Jays in action, the Cup Final right around the corner. And Bob McKenzie will join us at 6:25.